The year is 2023. All of humanity packed into a small building in Schaumburg and died to the plague. We are now in the year 2024, and the Good Child Dynasty has resurrected humanity to bring back the most important podcast known as...
Trapped Under Plastic. The miniature painting equivalent of putting a movie on in the background to mask the sounds of fornication.
Whose sounds?
That's fucking...
Like your own sounds of fornication, or like the sounds in the next room? Like,
what? Oh, God, that is the real question.
Like, what is this scenario?
I mean, if it's not in the background, that gives the impression that, like, it is background noise because, you know, you're more listening to the foreground noise, which means if it is somebody else, that's extra creepers.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, which that checks out for our typical audience.
Yeah, that checks out. Oh, my God. If it's not obvious, John and I are both a little sick right now. We were sick, like, last week, and we're kind of fine now, but still have remaining coughs.
Yeah, we just have sexier voices today.
Yeah, it's very deep.
Other than the coughs that go with it.
And, the wheezing sounds. But we're back from Adepticon, and I have things to talk about Adepticon. Before we get there, though, a little preamble ramble.
Yeah, yeah.
I posted this thing in my Instagram story, expecting no one to reply to it, but... When I get cough, like really coughy, I make like a little wheezy sound, yeah. Like at the end of the cough. And the sound reminds me of a movie that I watched as a kid called The Mummy. And at the very last scene in The Mummy, there's this mummy girl called Anaxanamun who is like she's trying to kill somebody. And she like makes this like wretched wheezing sound. And I was like, does anyone ever, when they're like coughing a lot, get reminded of that sound? And five fucking people were like, yes, dude. That is in my, that sound is baked into my fucking brain, and I can never not hear it whenever I'm coughing. I was like, holy fucking shit, I'm not alone.
I need to rewatch that, because when I saw that, I was like, I recognize it. I'm like, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
But my brain doesn't go there immediately. I got a couple things.
All right.
This is your shirt.
What the? Oh, my God, my Vector shirt.
Yeah, dude, it somehow got wedged in with all my dirty clothes. From Adepticon,
because
like giant slobs, all of our clothes were like shoved into a giant pile.
Yeah.
So somehow when I was putting my stuff away, you took it on there, so I washed it.
Thank you.
And the second thing, this is going to help us with our coughs.
Oh, God, Jesus. Fuck.
Okay, so I brought this to Adepticon for us to try.
I saw someone do this on a podcast, and the reaction was so fucking visceral, dude.
So this is called Bottled Insanity XL. Which is a great name. This is smelling salts. And
okay, I will do this, but you have to do it first.
Yeah.
Okay.
So all you do is you just open it, you take just a little sniff. Don't like cocaine snort this.
No.
Okay? There's a little sniff. I don't know what this is gonna be like either. I've never done this before. But I think it can only help our coughs in this episode.
So he brought these to Adepticon to do at some point, but we never got around to doing it.
Yeah,
so.
Well, we're gonna do it at Tup Live, and then I forgot to bring it there. And then after that, the weekend got away from us.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so I'm gonna do this.
All right, while he does that, we'll talk more preamble ramble. I've watched a lot of movies. If you didn't catch the intro, that was a reference to Aeon Flux. I've watched, are you in right away?
It wasn't that bad.
No, I think there are things inside there that you have to open.
Oh, okay.
I could be wrong, though. That's what I saw someone else do.
There is.
You have to, like, crack it or something like that. But I've watched a lot of movies. Goody Peepees, Revenge of the Nerds, Aeon Flux, Constantine. I was a rewatch. Pitch Black and the Batman movie, the new one.
I got to add a little water to it. I'm going to go do that. That's
all right,
I'm
going to go do that. Okay.
You talk about your movies.
I'll talk about my movies. But I'm also a fan of bad movies, and in the bad movie realm, I watched this new one called New Barbarians from the 80s, which was an Italian movie that was kind of a riff on Mad Max. And man, it had all of the trappings of a terrible 80s sci-fi movie that was Italian directed, I think. Terrible costumes. By terrible, I mean absolutely amazing. Bizarre dialogue, bizarre ADR, everything. But the best part of the movie was just this shocking moment. They dropped right into, like, I don't know, like 3/5 the way through the timeline or something like that, like right before the third act. There were these, the main villains in this movie are called the I think they're called the New Templars or just the Templars or something like that. maybe just the Templars. And their whole mission was to like kill the entirety of humanity. Because after the apocalypse, they felt like humans no longer had a place on Earth. And so like, okay, we're just going to kill them all. And we're the ones that are, chosen to do that. You got the mixings.
And dude, the bottle's getting warm.
Okay. I just want to say that the example I saw of smelling salts did not involve pouring water into the bottle and shaking it up. I'm fucking terrified. Anyways, okay, in this movie, the New Templars, they're chasing this main character who's like, again, very Mad Max, Mel Gibson alike, and their whole mission is to kill everyone on Earth. That's the Templars' goal. So they grab this guy, finally, like near the end of the movie, they string him up to some kind of medieval torture rack thing, and everyone's standing around him, and like the main leader of the Templars gets this big like glass-like blade. And he's like, he lifts it up high and he's standing behind, this is a spoiler, by the way, obviously. he lifts up his glass blade high behind one of the main characters and it's like, okay, he's going to stab him. He's going to kill him. Like that's their whole goal. They kill people. Like they want all humans to die. He takes the fucking glass knife and he like swings down and it misses him, but it cuts open the back of his pants and he just proceeds to sodomize this guy.
What the hell? That's the big plot twist?
And then it's never mentioned again. It never happens again.
Never happens. Never talked about.
Like, they could have just cut that entirely. Gotten the PG-13 rating, and the story would have been affected in any fucking way. And then the director was like, you know what? Like,
no, this is important.
I want some butt sex.
Right. Like, well, I mean, in that moment, if you're that guy and you're just like, well, at least I'm not dead.
Yeah. The,
maybe that helps. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. But, you know, imagine my situation. I'm a little toasted. I'm a little high. And I was watching this shitty 80s fantasy movie or sci-fi movie. And, you know, it's delivering. It's bad in many ways. And then all of a sudden, this fucking happens. And I was just like, oh, my God. Like, what on earth? Where did this come from? It was great.
Oh, man.
It delivered hard.
Did you talk about Constantine yet?
I mentioned it. I love Constantine.
Can we talk about how that's, like, the best movie ever made?
Yes, we can.
Okay. Because it's, dude, and I'm sorry because I can't remember the name of the actor that plays Satan in that movie.
Oh.
But he's well known. But that is the best like version, depiction, acting of Satan that has ever been.
Yeah, I can't think of anything better, honestly.
It is like he's you can just sense
a good
vileness and his power.
Yes.
But he's just like Oh, he's almost like a vampire in that, just that eerie charisma to him.
Right. Yeah. Like he like grabs Constantine by like the ankle and like drags him because he's like, all right, time for you to die, bitch. Like it's your time.
Just
that's brutal. And also he's like in the other room, his son, Mammon and like Gabriel are trying to bring Mammon into the earth. Uh-huh. And so Constantine's like, hey, you know, this is happening. He's like, okay, let me go take care of it. Walks over there, fucking incinerates them, and then comes back and he's like, all right, now you and me. And it's just like, I love that. It's just like, yeah, okay, this is Satan.
Yeah, thanks for calling me.
Yeah.
I'll go take care of that quick.
All right, you ready to fucking die, bro?
Oh, man, yes.
Oh, man.
All right, let's
are we interesting the rebirth of John here? Is he, dude, please don't die. Oh, my God, there was like a...
I had some Gobers in my mouth. Oh my.
I'm terrified.
Whoa. Whoa.
His eyes are watering. I kind of was like, is he trying not to puke right now? He brought the mic over to talk into it and then just fucking started choking.
That is. I've never experienced anything like that in my life.
Oh my God.
Okay, the closest thing I can describe it as is you ever accidentally in a swimming pool snort up a bunch of chlorine water up your nose?
Yeah, probably, yeah.
Well, you're going to just do it again. Do not take a big sniff.
Okay.
Just get it like a foot away and just do that and then put
the lid. A foot away? You were like 4 inches close to it.
Okay. Well, don't do it. Yeah. It's not that bad. It, like, your brain.
Dude, this guy, it's not that bad. Did you fucking see that reaction?
I'm still crying. Your brain blue screens a death. But it only lasts a second, and then the reboot happens.
All right.
Here you go.
A foot away. I think I'm going to go a little closer.
Yeah, go a little closer, but be ready with the cap right over it to put it right back on.
Okay.
Woo!
Holy shit. That is absolutely like you described it.
Yeah,
it is. I just like burned a fucking passageway right down both my nostrils like instantaneously.
Yeah. You just took a Milwaukee cordless drill right up to your brain and then you're done. I don't, this is supposed to like make you want to like lift weights and shit.
No way.
That's the last thing I want to do right now.
No, yeah.
I want to just sit down and cry.
Maybe watch Constantine again.
So okay. Also, these things lose their intensity over time. So the most potent this will ever be was what we just did.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, that was fine.
Yeah. I think I could go a little bit closer. I don't know how close I actually ended up getting. Maybe it was like 8 inches away.
Is it? There's this weird period of time where you're like, oh, it didn't actually do anything. And then when you're halfway, your brain saying it didn't actually, then it just goes,
like, I was just struck about how, like, once it started, how just instantaneous it was.
Yes.
It was just like,
and it feels like,
wow,
please go away.
Yes.
But it doesn't last long. Thank God.
Yeah, it does not last long. Okay.
All right, are we ready to do the rest of this episode?
I guess.
This episode brought to you by Bottled Insanity.
I thought we were just having a conversation right now. I don't even know we're fucking doing an episode.
I don't know what we were talking about.
All right, okay. I talked about movies. I talked about Mummy Wheeze. Everyone got sick at Adepticon. This is true.
You did get the Mummy Wheeze. Yeah, so that was the first thing I want to talk about is everyone got sick at Adepticon. I don't know if there is any of our friends that went to Adepticon that didn't get sick.
Yeah, I think they all did.
Like, Vince everybody. Actually, I don't. Did Curtis get sick?
No, not that I know, no.
Okay. Did Evan get sick?
No, he didn't.
I don't think Joshy did either. No, Joshy did. But our little sect was weird in that you and I got sick. I think Joshy got a little bit sick. But everyone in our room, and I include Evan in our room because he basically lived there. none of us got COVID.
Yeah.
But like everybody else we know got COVID.
Yeah.
I mean, some people didn't get COVID but also got sick too. But like, I don't know anybody that didn't get sick. But that's fine.
Yeah. So I didn't even get sick after Adepticon. I came back from Adepticon. I spent that whole like Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. I was fine. And then on Wednesday, I got sick. Mm. So maybe that was from Adepticon. It could have been, right?
Yeah, but like, it was. You know what that was? I got to the bottom of that.
Okay.
So you fucking figured it out.
I figured it out. So at Adepticon, the first night, Scott was uber paranoid about getting sick. So I bring a lot of vitamins.
Yeah,
I got my shit all on lockdown in those like old people vitamin things where it's a different one for each day of the week.
Yeah, dude.
And I had brought enough for each day for me to also have all the days were filled to also have an extra set. So I put Scott on a vitamin regimen. What happened was you got home and you didn't continue the vitamin regimen, did you?
So I might have taken like a vitamin C thing, but that was it.
So what happened is you had the bugs in you. But your immune system was fighting them off. Like, they were putting up a good fight. Mm. They were using glass swords.
Okay? They were fucking butt-fucking.
Yeah. Those viruses were getting taken to Pound Town.
Oh, God.
But then
then you stop feeding, you know, your immune system the bottled insanity. And then suddenly they lost the juice and they were the ones.
No, my immune system.
Getting bucked in the foot. So that's what happened. And so the tables turned just when your immune system was feeling strong.
Yeah.
And they weren't given the juice.
They got strung up.
And they,
yeah. Okay, that's fair. I feel like I've gotten sick 4 times in the last year. I don't know what's going on. So Amber looked up like things that can weaken your immune system. And I'm committing like half of the fucking list.
Just a checklist.
Yeah, basically a checklist for me. And I was like, all right, we got to make some lifestyle changes here. I can't keep getting sick. It's so fucking annoying to get sick, honestly.
Well, I think that's also good timing for this. For us in the Great White North, when we have, 6 months of like, it's just shitty to go outside.
Yeah.
Being active and, getting your heart rate up at least once a day and stuff, that does a whole lot to build your immune system. Yeah. So now it's getting nice out.
Finally!
Right? Then it's a good season of change, right? a rebirth will happen.
Yes.
And the instigation is getting our brains exploded by smelling salts.
Yeah.
That is it. That's the starting point. So that's it. Also, we're going to have chicken wings for lunch, so that'll help.
Yeah, that'll definitely help. A little deep fry, yeah.
That'll help. So yeah, there's everyone done got down with the sickness. Okay, I have a couple other things. Yeah. So this last week, my daughter was on spring break, and I had got her a Christmas gift. My wife and I got her a Christmas gift.
Are we going shoes off right now?
Yeah, dude, because I got Mountain Dew socks on.
Okay, I don't have Mountain Dew socks on right now, but I want to join the party.
Yeah, so we got Mountain Dew socks, and it goes. And these are I just took a shower, and then these are new socks, so they're not gonna be stinky feet.
Fresh.
So. For Christmas, we were going to take her to a trip, once the weather got nicer, up to Cafe Meow in New Hope, Minnesota.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so on Tuesday this last week, we took her up to Cafe Meow. Have you ever been to a cat cafe?
No, dude.
Dude. I mean, dude, people that don't like cats are going to roll their eyes, so you can just tune out for the next 2 minutes. But it is fucking awesome.
Yes.
Dude, you go get whatever fun drink you want.
Okay.
And then it's like there's like two separate parts. There's like an actual like coffee shop, and they got this series of like double doors, double security, so the cats don't escape. And then this whole other room, which there is a whole wall of windows connecting the two parts. So when you're in the coffee thing, you could still look at the cats and the people playing with the cats.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can go in, and you have to you pay for time. It's like $10 an hour.
Fuck. Okay, that's kind of expensive.
Yeah, but you know what?
A gift, not whatever.
Right. So we all went. We got tickets. We ordered tickets in advance because you know there's only so many people that can be in there at a time per hour block, and you can go in and spend like $3 for like a 15-minute one shot. You just go in there 15 minutes, order your coffee, you go in there, pet some kitty cats, and then you're out.
There you go.
But the cool thing about it is that there was 23 cats there when we were there, and it didn't stink. Like, it didn't, I would assume it was going to stink. I mean, it's a big open air room. They had like a lot of air purifiers going in, and the way that they set up the kitty litter box, it was pretty sweet. Anyway, all these cats are being fostered by the cafe by a local Paws and Claws. And the amount of cats that get adopted by this cat cafe is phenomenal.
There you go. Okay.
So like they've only been open, I think, like, I don't know, like a year and a half or something, or 2 years, not that long. And they've already, like, I think, 600 cats have been adopted.
That's awesome.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, and every cat was nice, you know? They all have their personality. Some wanted to play. Some just wanted you to give them scritches.
Yeah.
You know?
That's so cool.
It was so cool.
I wonder if they handpick the ones that are, like, more social or, like, more okay with socialness than, like, maybe some of the cats are, like, a little bit more, like, want to be left alone kind of.
Yeah, like crotchety old lady cat.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Like, don't mess with Darla. She will fuck you up.
Yeah, dude.
Those little kittens that come around and want to play, and she just bites your head off. But anyway, I just thought it was cool. I don't know, Goody Peepees, if you have a cat cafe in your city, but I think every shitty should have one. So they're pretty awesome, right?
Yeah.
And also, it's not a bad business model. If you think about it, like, there's so many dang coffee shops and stuff. What sets you apart?
Cats, bro.
Bro, cats.
Motherfucking kitties.
Kitty Mau Mau's.
Yeah. So, I would love to go at least once just to see it.
I think you and Amber should go. You'd have a fun time. It's just like it's
for sure.
And there's a it's in a strip mall there, and there's a restaurant attached to the strip mall. We had lunch there. And it's like Chicago style restaurant and bar.
Cool.
And I had a Italian beef sandwich.
Oh yeah.
With fucking dippers. You dipper in the au jus.
Yeah, they baptize it.
It was great.
Okay.
It was great. And they must work with a local bakery to get all like their buns and stuff, because my daughter got like a croissant turkey bacon cheese sandwich on a croissant, and that croissant was money. So, you know, you can go eat, see some kitty meows.
In New Hope.
In New Hope, Minnesota.
Okay. Okay.
Cafe Meow.
I'll look into it. I had a friend growing up, his name was Everett, and he had 20 to 30 cats in his house at any given time.
That's not okay.
Because his mom loved cats, and whatever she found when she kept them.
That's not love. That's obsession.
Yeah, you know, I mean, whatever it was, the house smelled terrible. But we I don't want to extend this preamble too long, but we played this game where we tried to like get all the cats in one area of the house. And like one friend would be like the guardian that would keep the cats in the one space, and then the other person would go and collect the cats.
You go run, you like throw them over his shoulder.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of ammonia, because that's what this is. That's what cat pee is.
Okay.
It's ammonia smell.
So if you just took a bunch of cat pee and put it in a jar and sniffed it, it'd be that. I'm dying. Okay. Last thing on the preamble, Rambo is.
It's Easter, boys.
Best Easter food. I had turkey dinner yesterday with Mr. Dan Malson.
Oh, turkey din-dins?
Yeah.
Yeah, Dan told me you guys are playing some games, too.
Yes, we played Unmatched. We played Steam Up, which is a dim sum game, and also Wingspan.
Dim sum. It just make me hungry for dim sum if I play that game.
Yeah. All right, take it away. I have to cough a bazillion times.
Okay. So we're recording this episode a little bit later than we usually do. We usually record on Fridays. This is the following Monday, so we're over the Easter weekend. So it's just fresh on my brain of Easter times, right? And there's a lot of Easter goodies and Easter meal stuff. I think the ham dinner, you have a big old country ham with mashed potatoes and ham gravy, is the best thing in the planet on Easter.
Okay.
I mean, Thanksgiving's for turkey. Turkey dinner's great, too. Both are great. But you got to have that ham dinner. Do you have a certain, like Easter time treats that you like? You like them Reese's eggs, the ideal shape?
That's exactly what I was going to say, dude. That peanut butter filling comes in so strong.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so good. Scott's left us. So, one thing, I feel like the ammonia hurt you rather than helped you. It had the opposite effect that I was hoping it would have on your cold. To me, the Cadbury cream egg is a thing of beauty. It's a kind of thing that if the Cadbury cream egg was available all year round, it would be too much, you know?
I do love that European milk chocolate taste.
Yes.
Good. I like Hershey's too. I like them both, but like they're both, both good for
Cadbury
different reasons.
Cream egg. Have you ever met a person that eats a, you know what I'm talking about, Cadbury cream egg. Looks like the size of an egg with cream on the inside. Have you ever met a monster that'll eat those in like one bite? They put the whole thing in their mouth?
No.
If you ever meet one of those people, run away.
Okay. Why have you?
They're serial killers, dude. You can't eat that in one bite. It's like, what are you, just like you don't even care? Like life doesn't even matter anymore.
Nothing is sacred.
Is nothing sacred to you?
You're just a Cadbury one egger, dude.
Yeah, dude, just suck the whole thing down.
Just
like a golf
suck
ball.
It down like fucking Patrick sucks down cookies, dude.
Oh man, it's like a golf ball through a garden hose. Oh,
God.
So yeah, that is our goody peepees. Do you have a certain go-to Easter time treat? Whether that's something you buy in a store, something that is made in your home, something that you're. Maybe your mom or your grandma made that you always had at Easter time. I'm curious because I like to, you know, switch it up. You know, sometimes you bring one new thing to the party. And
you should bring smelling salts to Easter next time.
Woo! I'm going to hit that again a little bit.
Why?
I don't know.
you're just man on edge, dude.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
All right. Well, we paid it. John, take it away while I die.
Why are you coughing so much, bro?
I don't know.
Like, okay, everyone's going to be like, Scott, you're so fucking sick. Why are you hanging out with John? Like, I feel fine. Well, I got a tickle in my throat right now. And it's going away.
You have the exact same thing that I have. I'm just like 3 days ahead of you.
Is that what it is?
Because you started getting sick on like the Wednesday or Thursday.
So you're saying is the vitamins actually hurt me?
No, the vitamins helped you, and then you just you abandoned them in, in your time of need.
Okay. Yeah.
So yeah, I had it a couple days earlier, and I got over it quicker because I kept with the vitamins. But we, I still have the trailings of the phlegmy cough, and you're like me 4 days ago and like knee deep in phlegmy cough. Yeah. But you feel fine.
Yeah, I feel like dude, 2 days ago I was like I came into work 2 days ago. Like at like 8:30, and like I was so sweaty, and I tried to paint, and I painted until like 2 p.m., but I was like fucking, I felt like I was dying, and then I left. Which is so weird to say, because it's like, is painting minis really that fucking hard? Like, is it that physically or mentally strenuous? But man, I could not do it for a full 8.
Yeah, I feel like oftentimes when you're sick, like one of the things you lose is your ability to pay attention, like your attention span, and your brain gets a little foggy, a little cloudy. You can't focus for very long. I often found too, because last week I painted like most of, you know, like three straight days. And when I was in knee deep in the sickness, and like I felt like I got headaches quick, and then I was like mentally exhausted. I'm like, God, I've been doing paint and armor. Why is this so much work? Which leads into what I painted, which is the big daddy orc of them all, which was Ghazghul Thraka. So this guy is like the size of what are those big space marine like casket robots? What's a casket robot?
A dreadnought?
Dreadnought. Yeah, casket robot. So yeah, I painted Ghazghul, and in the after party today, I'm going to kind of dig a little bit more into the new thing I tried with him, which is more or less not about doing something I've never done before, but it was kind of more of like a conscious mental shift, which I think was actually really helpful for me. But it was just fun. I didn't try to like get super into it in terms of smoothness, and every single thing has to be like the way that I've been painting lately for the Golden Demon stuff. And that was really, really fun. It's just a fun thing, but there's so much same on him. There's so many big like black armor metal plates all over him with different angles and different things and whatever, and there's a lot of stuff, but it feels like there needs to be a lot of stuff because he's so big. Otherwise, if it's just like a big block shape thing, it would be very boring and silly looking. So yeah, and he was the reason I painted him, and he's going over to Nottingham. The sponsor is a company that is bringing out a mobile and Steam CCG Warhammer 40K Warp Forge. It's the name of the game. So it's a game kind of like Hearthstone that is for the Warhammer universe. And I played the beta of it. It's a pretty freaking fun game. And so you pick your hero, or like, you know, whatever faction you pick, you can pick the hero that you're playing as, and then you get to run that army through the card game. And for the orcs, Ghazghul is there. And so I based him off of unique art that they had made for the game of Ghazghul. So the color scheme, the pose, switching up his pose a little bit, the environment that he's in, the color scheme of the terrain and everything. Even like he's like smashing down, and there's like a space marine helmet that's like flying off the rocks of the base. And he is, I kind of did that and had that flying off too. So it's pretty fun. It's kind of nice to just be like, okay, because they wanted it to mimic that of the character from their game. And so he's going to be on display there at Warhammer Fest at their booth. Apparently they have a big awesome booth that's going to be there at Warhammer Fest, and he's going to be there, and you can win him. So that model will be, I think there's a drawing or something you can put in, and you can win him.
Awesome.
Are you dead?
I just want to say that I have not coughed this much.
I think even, you need another shot.
Even when I was sick, I was not coughing this much.
You got that hankering.
I'm fucking dying right now. Okay, what I painted, first of all, that Ghazghul looks really good. I can tell how much of a departure it is from, like, just typically, like, what, the way you paint and the colors you choose. And it does. You said in our group chat that it was like kind of like Sam Linz's style.
Yeah, it was inspired by the way Sam paints.
And that's very obvious. You know, yeah. I could absolutely tell. So you 100% achieved that goal.
Yep, and that's going to be kind of part of the video, the kind of the storyline of the video is that. So taking inspiration.
Nice. I wanted to paint a Nikko Galaxy model, and a lot of their subjects are Eastern Asian subjects, Chinese, Japanese, Korean, maybe some Southeast Asian as well. And I don't have any experience painting that skin tone. I really just paint Caucasian skin tones mostly, and I've painted a couple of black subjects, but I'm not very good at those. And so I wanted to do a little research before I kind of dove into a 75mm display model painting a new skin tone that I wasn't familiar with. Like, I didn't want it to look Caucasian. I wanted it to look different. Because I want to kind of stretch that muscle.
Yeah.
And so I painted a Bushido model that I got from Adepticon for free from the guys at the booth.
Uh-huh.
And I did a little research prior. And, man, I'm kind of at the point in this process where I've done, like, a lot of stuff for this video. And, like, this could totally be a video by itself, just these two things I did. But I have a whole ass fucking model and base to paint still. And so the video might end up being like fucking 30 minutes long because like there's just so much to say. So I'm trying to figure out like what I'm going to remove, like what's not that important, like what's just me like over explaining things and stuff like that. But in order to figure out how like Caucasian skin tones and Eastern Asian skin tones differ, I just did a little test. First of all, there are tons of skin tones in East Asia and tons of different kinds of skin tones across humans in like North America and like, you know, Caucasian areas and in Western Europe and stuff like that. So it's hard to boil down an entire like skin tone into one person. And so I just found two pictures, a picture of a Japanese lady and a picture of an American lady that I thought like that in my head reminded me of a Caucasian skin tone and what I was shooting for with my model.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of narrowed the scope. And then I like grabbed three areas on both of their faces that represented the highlight, the midtone, and the shadow to me. And I used this thing in Photoshop called an average blur, where you take all the pixels in that little cube, essentially, or whatever the shape is, and you average the colors to one tone, just so that I wasn't grabbing any bizarrely bright or dark colors. And then I compared them. I compared the shadow and the midtone and the highlight on both subjects. And the difference was so obvious, but subtle. And the plain truth is that the Caucasian skin tone in those two pictures was just, there was just more red in it. There was just more warmth.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't like, because everyone says that like East Asian skin tones have more yellow in it. But I think it's more of an absence of red than it is more yellow. And so on the Bushido model, I tried to mix skin tones, and I got to a place that was too yellow, too comically yellow, I think. And so then on the other one, I tried something more subtle, but it's not, I wouldn't say she's reading as Japanese or any kind of East Asian for that matter, but it's not as warm as some of my previous skin tones I've done. So maybe when you look at it next to a Caucasian skin tone model, maybe you would feel Japanese, but in a vacuum, I don't think it does.
Yeah, it's well, first of all, the one you have in the Bushido model, it's a little bit over exaggerated, but at this scale, just how we paint miniatures, one thing that's important is to over exaggerate because you're dealing with such a small thing. And whether that's over-exaggerating highlights, over-exaggerating volumes, over-exaggerating depth of color and big changes, I think it helps it read if your goal is for an initial look to give a certain impression.
Sure, yeah.
And when you're working on a bigger scale, that's harder.
Yeah.
And there's a couple things that I think of when I think of this is, one, it's not the utter lack of red skin tone of red in an Eastern Asian skin tone. It's much more confined, and the thing you're doing here with the Nikko Galaxy bus is it's there, but it's you're confining it to like the rosiness of the cheeks or maybe a little bit on the nose, mm-hmm. instead of it being more widespread for us Caucasian.
Yeah. It's like tone. All in the palate, right?
And I think the other thing that you're probably fighting with here, which has nothing to do with the way you painted with it, is the actual facial sculpt is a very Western face.
Kind of, yeah. So the art for Rosie looks significantly more like Japanese than what the sculpt ended up looking like.
Yes.
So there was that. Oh, another thing about that kind of skin tone is it's very fair. It's very pale.
Yes.
And I don't know if that's because like Korea and Japan especially have a very strong like beauty like culture. Like they wear makeup a lot.
Mm.
And so like a lot of that foundation might have like more of like a pale complexion in it. Mm. But yeah, so they have very fair skin tones, very, very low blemish, like look.
And that's very hard to paint.
Yeah.
Especially
I did a little bit of research about makeup and stuff like that. So it's helping me out.
Yeah.
And about the yellow, you mentioned the yellow not being strong enough. I started to glaze in yellow into the brightest highlights just to try to slowly bring it in. Then I kind of fucked up the forehead a little bit. It's a little chunky. I don't know how I'm going to fix. There's a couple of brush strokes on there I'm not super happy with, but I don't know at this stage how to fix them. I'd have to remove paint, I think, and I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, kind of restart a little bit.
Yeah.
But there's very few. I see like three.
Yeah.
Right.
And when you put it on a full 75 mil figure, no one's going to care.
Right. And yeah. And it's very striking, you know, at like the 18 inch distance.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they completely disappear at that.
Yeah.
And I see like all the really good things.
Okay. I think I'm past the coffin. Right. Knock on wood.
You want another little hit?
I don't think that was it. I think
that was it.
Okay, maybe it was.
Because immediately afterwards, when your brain reset, it was just kind of like,
what the fuck, bro?
Your whole face just turned. So maybe you just needed to get all the way through the system.
All right.
All
the way through. So now we're on Adepticon.
Now we're on to Adepticon.
I feel like this could be a two-parter.
Yeah, yeah. And because we have done, and people have made comments, is like, oh, you got this. We have a tough episode pre-Adepticon. We got a tough episode at Adepticon. We got a tough episode post-Adepticon. We like to think that each of those is distinctly different, and we don't want it to be like you're missing out, and if you weren't there or don't go to conventions, that there's nothing to be gained from these episodes. It's really, we're trying to avoid that and just more kind of just talk about some fun stuff.
Yeah.
Especially this one.
And maybe what we can do is we can avoid rehashing the details we already talked about in the Adepticon episode. Because I mentioned like demoing Shatterpoint and Free Blades, and so I won't talk about that again, obviously. Like maybe we can kind of avoid some of those.
Yeah, we'll try to. What I can remember. But before we jump into that, we have today's sponsor, which is we don't have a sponsor, so you get to hear us really quick talk about the Patreon for Trapped Under Plastic.
Yeah. If you like the podcast and you want to hear more of it, you can get access to an extended episode about 20 to 30 minutes longer for $5 a month. In addition, you also get to submit topics and also minis for us to give feedback to during that extended portion. So you can submit one of your models and we'll pick one for an episode to give feedback to. You can give us topics that we may or may not pick for an episode. We credit you when we do that. And you also have the great knowledge that you have exquisite taste in fine podcasts. This is Trapped Under Plastic.
Yeah. And I think in addition to that, it really shows the support for what we do, because I mean, we are both small businesses, and it is, we know we only do a episode every other week, but it is a pretty massive hit on our hourly amount of hours in a week we have to work, because we both kind of have to commit a full work day to this.
Yeah.
And it just really reinforces us and keeps us striving to continue to want to do this and have fun with it, because we know that the support is there. So anyone that does support us on Patreon, know that we really do appreciate it. We value that oh so much. And we don't feel terrible in weeks like this when we don't have a sponsor, that it is still very much, you know, we're still excited and we don't feel, you know, bad about it. We love doing this. So it really is kind of the kick in the pants, and we really appreciate that people do that. And if you can't fit it into your budget to support us there, that is perfectly fine. You watching every episode is very, very important to us, or listening, or both.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you're curious what was in that extended portion of the episode, again, we give feedback. We talk about models that we like from other painters, and we also talk about new things we've tried in the hobby, whether that was a failure or a success or somewhere in the middle. So that's the kind of extra content you get when signing up.
Yeah, and if you know of a miniature-related company that you think would might be a good sponsor, or if you have any connections there, kind of poke them, prod them, send them an email, because we want to have the people that sponsor this show to be within the hobby realm and stuff that we like and people that we appreciate. So that's also a great way that you could help support us, or even if you just put in the comments below, hey, you guys should ask so-and-so. So I have a couple new ones that we met at Adepticon that I think would be great.
Yeah.
You know? So because we know a lot of these companies are small companies as well, that we keep it in terms of reach, in terms of getting their name and products out there, we keep that real affordable for them to be able to advertise with us, so we can have a win-win for everybody there.
And if 1 month charges, like monthly charges, aren't your thing, we also have a Teespring link down in our show notes and description where you can pick up some merch for the podcast, both t-shirts, hoodies, cups. I think there are some joggers down there and other things as well.
I saw a good amount of Goody PP Destroyer of Tendies shirts.
So did I. That was awesome. All right, on to the Adepticon. Where do we begin?
I want to start at the very beginning, which is when we first rolled up. So the first thing, and we weren't really fully aware of this, but we were told it's going to continue next year, and we kind of hopped into it, and it was an amazing way to start off Adepticon. The best jump start to Adepticon that I've ever had was the content creator meetup. Remember that on Wednesday?
No, I don't remember that.
Don't remember, no.
I remember it. Remember it because we were late.
Yeah, we were a little bit late.
Because of me.
We were a little bit late.
Yep.
But it is open to anybody and everybody to just come hang out. And all the content creators that are there on Wednesday, late afternoon, early evening, will be there. And you can just kind of chat with people. It's a great way to start that way, too. If, like, oh, you wanted to talk to Goobs and you didn't want to worry about looking for him all con long, then you know right at the very beginning you get to meet yourself a Goobs.
Yeah.
And have a great conversation there. So that was fun, and that was like supposed to be 2 hours, and like the 2 hours just flew by.
Yeah.
It was so much fun. So.
Yeah. I got to meet some of my favorite content creators at the content creator meeting. We got to meet Marco Frazzoni, dude.
No, just me,
con. And we had kind of a shorter chat because I was like, I'm definitely going to talk to you at another point in the con. And then I never saw him again. I was just like, God damn it.
I must have been in a different fucking universe because I never saw Marco at that content creator thing.
Yeah, he was there.
But I ran into him two separate times on the show floor throughout the convention. And I got to say, in person, my Marco impression is better than his Marco impression. Like, people, I ask people, close your eyes. Which one of us is the real Marco?
Yeah.
Which one of us is John pretending to be Marco? They couldn't tell.
Is this true? Is this fake news?
I mean, listen.
Okay. You know the answer. Yeah, to that,
you know, in people that went through this test, they know the answer already. Marco is just a sweetheart of a man, too.
Yeah,
so nice, so humble, so happy. He was so happy to be there.
Yeah.
And I was just so glad that he made the trip. And he taught, too. So, you know.
Yes. I think that's why I didn't end up seeing him again, because he was very often in classes. And he mentioned, I think, to me that because he's a new person to teaching classes at Adepticon, he kind of got all the bad times. And so he was teaching very often in the evening, which is kind of when we're out doing, you know, God knows what.
Yeah, we're just crawling around like gremlins.
Yeah.
At any point. So they're going to do the, I was already told they're going to do the meet and greet on the Wednesday again next year.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's only going to be bigger and better and awesomer. So,
yeah.
So that's cool.
We also got to meet Trent from Miscast finally.
Oh, God.
Dude, it was great.
Dude, he is the biggest hobbit.
Dude, he's not a small man.
I thought he would be smaller.
No.
He's
the same height as me.
Yeah, he's a big dude.
And if you don't know, because you think I'm short, I'm not short. I'm 6'1".
Yeah.
So he was tall, dude.
Yeah. I felt bad for Trent because I always felt like he was so tired the whole time.
because he lives
scared of you.
Yeah. Well, listen.
You know, Kanjan's kind of a, you got to know how to deal with them.
Right? Yeah. Because he had the giant time change thing and he like jumped right in. I don't think he had like a that much time to get adjusted his body. And then he succumbed to Kanjan night one.
He succumbed.
I may have corrupted him. For the rest of the convention.
And night one, you're feeding this guy illicit materials.
Listen, it was so, we had so much fun. Trent is such a great guy. He's so fun.
Yeah.
He's so fun. And again, he had such a good time too, from what we understand.
Yeah. So I asked him the same question at three points in the con. I asked him, are you coming back? And the first time it was an absolute no. And the second, because it was just too expensive. He told me it cost him $3,000 to make that flight and like do the whole thing and then lose the income from not making videos and like sales and stuff like that. Like that's an insane hit on your financials.
Yeah.
And so then I was like, okay, totally reasonable. Like we have this one time now. Let's just have fun now. And then we asked him again. He was kind of like, you know, maybe, I don't know. Like we'll see. And then at the end, it was like, definitely.
Yeah.
And I was like, yes!
Yeah, he found some niches.
Yes, so he did. He found some nooks and crannies that were for him.
Like the hidden grimdark alleyway of Adepticon.
First time I ever found this place.
I never got to go.
Yeah.
But I saw pictures. The stories were incredible.
Yeah, yeah. I walked in. Someone handed me a beer. They're like, hey, Scott, here's a beer. And I was like, all right. And then they walk by me. And then I walk like five more steps. And they're like, hey, Scott, here's a spell book for D&D. And I was like, oh, okay. And then he like walked right by me. And it was like some like fucking punk themed like spell book for D&D. And then I was like, oh, and people play Mordheim. People are playing Sixth Edition Warhammer Fantasy. And I was just like, what is this place?
Yeah, there's just like a single sketchy light bulb in there flickering. Yeah, it's the only thing to light the way.
And yeah.
I think because Adepticon was bigger and badder than ever, that it was like it allows these new like sub segments.
I gotta believe they've existed the entire time.
Oh, really? Really?
And we just didn't know. Believe. Yeah, yeah.
We were never on the inn?
Because I've never been in that part of the con. It's just this little kind of like side office space off of like a main hallway, but it's like a corner in the main hallway you would never go to because like you're just, okay, I'm turning left here to go into the expo hall. It's like, no, keep going straight, right into that corner, fucking hallway, a little two office room kind of deal. And it's just like, what? It's just, you would never go there. Unless you like were told to go there.
Interesting. Yeah, I still don't even know where you're talking about.
No, so. I mean, I can explain it further, but there's no point.
No, you don't need to. It's the mystery of it is what makes it so exciting.
Yeah, yeah.
People will have to find it themselves.
Yeah, yeah. I think we mentioned the grinder thing at Top Lies. I'm going to rehash that, but that was also awesome. Same crew of dudes.
Yeah, cool. Cool. So yeah, that was our, that was our first night. And I don't know in terms of, We specifically try to keep our schedules light at Adepticon. At least it feels like over the years we've kind of learned the version of the Adepticon that we enjoy the most includes scheduling as little as possible.
Yes.
Because we're just busy the whole time anyways.
Yes. And that was definitely true. I was busy a lot. I barely was able to go through the whole vendor hall and see everything that I wanted to see before the con ended because of all this shit that was going on. I had two interviews with two game designers. I had an interview with like the show runner of Adepticon, which unfortunately that video is kind of bombing in a magnificent way that is kind of historically unseen on my channel for a while.
But in and of itself is also a medal of victim of honor.
Yeah, kind of like, oh fuck, all right, I'm very unaware, but it was still really cool to talk to him and get to hear that kind of perspective about the show. Like for my own personal like gain, that was worth it. And then I talked to the designer for Relic Blade, which I know you bought some of those models.
Yeah.
And I talked to actually one of the guys who worked a little bit on Rivenstone, Will. He was there last year and we chatted with him. Remember last year when there were two developers from Rivenstone like really kind of going at it?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, the taller guy who is bald, like, yep. He is super passionate about game design. So I talked to him for a little bit. And it was like they were both excellent conversation. Son Sutter and Will Schoonover, or is it Schooner? I can't remember what it is. But yeah, they're both great guys.
Yeah, that's Sean is such a masterful dude. And we can get into what we bought too, because I know you talked about what you bought on your stream. I talked about it on my Patreon. But the greater Goody PP Nation should know of all the goodies that we left with.
The things we're most excited about.
Yeah. So you spent a good amount of time on the demoing gaming side.
I played like seven games. A lot of games.
I just played one game, and it's the best game that's ever been made.
TMG.
What's TMG?
MTG.
Did she just contract? Does this fucking say side effects may give you dyslexia?
I fucked it up.
Yeah, I did Magic Knight two nights. We had our own secret little club.
I know. I visited.
Yeah, you got to see the seedy underbelly of a dead end hallway.
I was scared. Yeah,
that we did turn into. We had scheduled with a small select group a Magic the Gathering draft night where we drafted the most recent set with a group of 10 of us, and including the great Vincey V and the Golden Demon winner for Diorama, Benjamin Cantor. And Sexy Teeth Joshy and a couple other good friends that we made along the way. Mm-hmm. So we did that one night, and we had so much fun that kind of ad hoc the next night, then Saturday night, we also did Commander Night down there in the same CD hallway, and there was a bunch of Commander going on, a bunch of pods running, and I just love Magic so much, dude. It's such a beautiful game, and I was so happy. I was like, there was no gaming that I could envision having done at Adepticon that would have made me happier than when I played Magic those two nights. And that's just,
there you go,
me, and I enjoyed it. So,
dude, absolutely. I mean, there's definitely an element of Magic that's very appealing to me as well. I don't play it at all, but I can see the writing on the wall that would definitely suck me in if I gave it the chance.
Oh yeah, man, you're just thinking in the fifth dimension in your brain about
the fifth dimension.
Yeah, dude.
Fuck
yeah,
the fourth dimension.
Right. Yeah, you're like, well, what am I going to do this turn, then the turn after that, and the turn after that, and the turn after that. But if they then I, so you, like, you have to unravel all the chapters of the book in your head before you get to them. And that I love. But if you just want to, like, I want to put down my big cool monsters with awesome artwork on the cards and smash people, that's also really fun.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just a fun game that it will give as much as you want to take. And that is why Magic's been around for 30 years.
Yeah. And honestly, that kind of feeling that, like, if this, then that, like tactics, like brewing in your mind, like whenever that occurs in any game, that is incredibly satisfying for a game for me as well. Like when me and Curtis play with our A Song of Ice and Fire armies that we've played each other, like, I don't know, like 30 or 40 times at this point, it's just that the entire time, because we know exactly what, like, the tactics cards the opponent has, the abilities of the units, like how, like, the deployment affected the game state, like, it's just a lot of that. It doesn't happen like with other armies I'm less familiar with, but it's a very satisfying feeling.
Yeah, that I predict this is what he's going to do. If he didn't do that, why would he not have done that?
Or he's playing in a certain way. He must have this in his hand, kind of thing. Like, it's, yeah, you can see it, and it's like, it just really is a lot of fun.
I think any game, and that's true of miniature war games as much as well. The more well written and updated versions of those games that give you those moments of satisfaction for seeing and understanding the strategy, not only your own, but your opponent's, is such an important part to those games.
Yeah, and like, yeah, it's especially important when the strategy is like is deep and not just like super obvious and straightforward, right? It's like when the choices are, oh, I'm gonna get attacked or I'm gonna get charged, like that's obvious and like not satisfying to kind of figure out or work around. When there are other smaller details, I feel like that's when it's like most interesting. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we played. You played some Magic. I heard you were rather successful,
dude. I don't. There's very few things in life that I can crush people more in than a good game of Magic. So I enjoy that very, very much. Yeah, in fact, at the beginning of May, the official Magic, I think, Pro Tour is here in Minneapolis.
Mm.
I'm not going to participate in it, but I think I'm going to see if I can get a couple buddies that want to go up to on like the Saturday.
Scope it out.
Go up, hang out, play some cards, rip some packs.
There you go.
Do that kind of thing.
Maybe scope the skill level for next year, dude.
Yeah. So if any goody peepees are going to go to, I think it's called just like Magic Fest or whatever it's called in Minneapolis.
Magic Fest.
May 6th and 7th, I think 6th or 5th through 7th. I think 6th Saturday is the day that I'll be there. So if anyone's going to go, holler at your boy. You can get up. And we can rip some packs and we play some Commander together or something.
All right. I played A Song of Ice and Fire on that same night you were playing Magic the Gathering, and I got fucking destroyed. So that was my experience. I also got to play Guild Ball with Danny Boy, I think the prior day. Maybe it was the same day. No, that was the day we did Tup Live. I played, so I must have mentioned it at the show. Got to play a little bit of that. One other game I got to demo that was kind of cool, had a cool detail about it. I got to play a game called Zeogenesis, which was a mech game. Not big on mech stuff, but it was still a cool game.
It's got a badass name, dude.
It is badass, yeah. And they had a really interesting activation system that I want to run by you and see if you like it. So okay. Basically, say I got an army of 5 dudes and my opponent's got an army of 8 dudes.
Okay.
So I have 5 activations, they have 8 activations. And a typical back and forth, what you would see is I do my 5 and now I'm going to wait for you to finish your 8 and then we'll start turn 2.
Okay.
When I finish my 5, I spend a whole turn recharging, removing my activation tokens, and then I begin my turn 2 while you are still on your turn 1. Now there were no words like turn 1 and turn 2. It was just very fluid. It's like, okay, I'm re-racking and now I'm starting again.
So they'll at one point get a double activation because you'll be re-racking, right?
Exactly.
Okay.
But the thing that was super interesting is that there were many ways to spend activations faster, so you could like reset your army faster. So if you have like a special dude that you have out activated, you could like churn through your others to get back to a state where you could use that guy again. So there are a lot of mechanics where it was like speeding it up, slowing it down, timing it for the right thing. Like I could see it all. I was like, okay, this is gonna be a thing in this game. I couldn't like take advantage of it super well because I was shit. But it was a different way to think about like turns and stuff like that.
The only thing that worries me about that, just on first glance, and I'm sure it's something that they've put thought into, is that doesn't it feel like you are at a distinct disadvantage to have more dudes that are weaker when you don't actually get more activations than your opponent?
Yeah, maybe. I don't. That is a definite legitimate concern. It didn't feel that way when we were playing. Like all my little dudes had like very valuable things. They had like a lot of setup stuff that made my big guys more successful.
Oh,
so maybe like lower model counts are more risky in that. Yes, you get to keep trying your big things, but they have less setup, less reliable. I don't know.
Also,
it was a demo. So.
Also, when you kill one, if you have 4 dudes on your team and one of those dies, that's a huge percentage of your resources that's now gone.
Yes, yes.
Whereas if I have 7 and you kill one or 2 of them, especially if this the little derpy dudes that I'm going to throw in front of your face,
mm-hmm.
it's a lot less of a reason. Oh, yeah, this is pretty cool.
Yeah, also when you get like shot, this. You can react, and that spends your activations as well. So if you have like a higher model count force, you can still then attack with other things in your faction.
Oh, shit, okay.
So it's like maybe that's another thing, too. It's kind of a lot going on, but it was cool. And most notably, it was co-wrote by Andy Chambers of GW fucking fame. Like, this guy has done so much rule writing for GW back in the day, and he's now working on this game with other people as well. And so it was cool. It was cool to meet him. I got to shake his hand, talk to him a little bit, but that was really cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, I mean, if they'd be back, he would be a cool one to try to get an interview on.
I know. Okay, so I had this idea for future years. There are these things called roundtables, and you've seen it on YouTube. Mm-hmm. Get a bunch of amazing directors together to talk about a topic. And I was like, I would love to do 2 roundtables at Adepticon. A painter one, where we kind of give them a subject, and then like say Golden Demon, just discuss it for an hour, go. And like that would, like they would, rip it apart. They would like defend it. Like it'd be awesome to get like, some Italians, some Spanish, some British, some American painters, and have them argue about something. And same thing for game developers. I would love to do that, a round table with them, give them a discussion, like whatever you want to talk about, like skirmish games versus large-scale war games. Like what are the differences? What are the benefits? And just hear what they have to say.
You sound like more awesome opportunities for like evening events that people could attend
and watch.
And watch. And
that'd be so cool to watch right. and listen to. Yeah.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, we just it just feels like the thing that TendyCon would just love.
I love how TendyCon is like a human entity,
right?
It would love this. It would eat it up.
Yeah, it's just like a big like it's like the mother brain from Metroid, and it's just in this like weird hatch at the back of the ship is TendyCon, and she's just sitting there with her tendrils pulsing.
Yes,
and she loves it. She wants it.
Yeah.
I think that is the next. I mean, and I get, and I watched your video, and it was really insightful to me to kind of peek behind the curtain to see all the things that they have to do to make Adepticon run, and how each little change or each little additional cog in the system is not so simple.
Yes.
Right. There's so many things to keep this machine running that I totally understand that.
Yeah, I want to mention one thing about that interview, though, about you specifically. So you gave me a question to ask, because you had a question that was kind of like important to you to hear the answer on. And there was kind of a bad answer to it. But there was a good reason for it. You told me to ask the question, like, do you guys get inspiration from other cons? And so I brought up E3. I brought up PAX East. I was like, do you get, you know, anything from these cons? And he was like, yeah, kind of. And then he went on to talk about Gen Con and LVO. And I was like, no. Like, yeah. Not those ones.
No, I want Comic Con.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, do you get inspiration from those ones? I didn't re-ask the question, but just the fact that I mentioned those cons and he immediately deviated elsewhere. And I was like, okay, so you don't.
Yeah,
so you don't look at those ones.
Yeah. If you're looking at that are kind of your parallels on the same kind of content side,
yeah,
you're maybe missing some opportunities for growth that have been successful outside of your.
Yeah. But to defend Matt a little bit, he did say at the end of the interview, he was like, you know, at some point, it's okay just to be like, we're not gonna innovate in huge ways. Like, this is what we can do with our time. We can't add on more. And like, this is what the show is going to be. And it's like, okay, like that, like, no, I'm not going to tell you, you need to work more to make this thing better for me. You know, like, if that's what you got, this is what you got. Like, that's fine.
And it's, I mean, because it's mostly run by volunteers and all these people, by and large, have their
full-time
job.
It's crazy to me.
Like, I almost just like be like, change that. Like, change that. But yeah. I mean, again, they do what makes it happy for them to want to continue doing that. That's the most important thing, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Have to kind of continue. Is there any of these conventions continue? You got to stay true to the kind of the core foundation of why you're doing it in the first place. And the more you get corporate or removed from that, the more it's sucking away the fun. So
yeah. Yeah.
I'm cool with that.
All right, cool. Yeah. So we did a couple of interviews, played a couple of demos. When you were wandering the expo hall, did you see any kind of cool thing that you didn't pick up or that interests you to kind of research like later on? Or what do you think?
Gosh, I feel like, so overall, I think I did loops of the vendor hall probably like 6 times. And I always felt like I was missing something because I don't know. I'm sure you experienced this too, but like, you know, you'd get into conversations. People come up to you and be like, hey, blah, blah, blah. And we get chatting and whatever. And sometimes you'd walk and talk something. You'd kind of stand there and talk. And then when I'd go to start moving again, somehow like the 15 feet behind me and the 30 feet in front of me, all of those booths ceased to exist because I was just distracted. And then I realized as I kept walking, I'm like, oh, I haven't even been looking at anything. So even though I went so many times, I still felt like I missed so many things.
Yeah. You gotta be kind of like deliberate and like looking for stuff.
Yeah. And you guys came back and talked about these different booths and these different things that you saw that I was like, I still don't remember ever seeing that. You, like, go back specifically and found the Bushido booth and the Warband that I was excited about that were they're sold out by that point.
Got it, yeah.
And stuff. So yeah, I saw this really cool one, and I had the guy you talked to me about it was running the booth. It was kind of at the tail end of one of the rows, and his thing was this system of painting handles that were all they were like wooden. Dowel style that were ergonomic, And they had a hole through the bottom, and they were all, they had like this rack system, kind of like what you'd, what you like store like beakers on once you've washed them and cleaned them upside down with like the pegs through them.
Yeah, yeah.
And they either had ones at an angle so you could put them on your wall, or flat so you could put them like on a desk or whatever. But the whole point of the system was that they were bulk, cheap, but still a nice quality and really good, you know, to hold in your hand. And his whole thing was like, when I'm painting a whole squad, you know, when I'm painting 20 models or 10 models or whatever, he's like, I like the GW handle. I like the Redgrass handle, but I don't want to spend $200 to get 10 of them. So he's like, that was my whole premise. He's just like a guy that does the work, woodworking on his own. He sells them in bulk and all this kind of stuff. And I didn't end up picking them up only because over the years I've gotten so many myself. But I was just like, that kind of a thing, that kind of a booth can exist, that he can make enough profit to make it worth his business to attend for the cost of the booth. And just like his small out of his shop kind of business can grow from something like that. That kind of thing excited me and wanted me to keep looking what other like cool little niche things were there. And it's not just all big name companies that had booths there. So,
okay. Well, if there was a booth that was doing Warhammer Flash tattoos at Adepticon, would you get one?
100%.
Okay. The guy who did the Kill Your Friends logo does Warhammer Flash tattoos, and he loves Warhammer. And he was like, I want to go. I want to get a booth there. And I was like, you should go, and you should start looking for a booth right now.
Yeah. Because
Jason Craze bought his booth for him and Mindwork Games for next year at the show. Like, they're like, we are not missing out.
Yeah.
And so I was like, dude, you should get on it like right now. And so I'm emailing Matt like on behalf of this guy to be like, hey, like you should get this guy in the show. Like, that'd be so fucking cool to have a tattoo booth at Adepticon.
If there's certain kind of like local laws and things about that.
Yeah, maybe.
But I mean, there are tattoo conventions all over the country all the time.
Yep.
And I wonder, the only thing would be, does it require the event to have a certain like insurance something?
Yes.
And if it's just one, is it worth it? Or would the tattoo artist have to then pay for it because they're the only one that's doing it?
Yes.
Does it make sense then?
Right. So I don't know if it's going to happen, but that'd be so cool. It'd be like a totally different kind of thing, but totally like, yeah, this makes sense.
Right.
But yeah, okay, one cool thing I saw, I think one day I was walking by this booth and Casey and Goobs was there, and they were talking to this guy, and he had like a Sciocast machine and like this crazy 3D printing thing, and this other machine that was like, had a multi-axis like rotational thing on it. And it was what it was this guy was, he was selling his service for mold making, master printing. And he was like, I have skills in all of these things, in all these machines. So if you need me for any like element of design or production of miniatures, like, here's my business card. So he wasn't selling a physical product. He was selling his service to people in the industry that would need it. And I was just kind of like, wow, okay, like, I wouldn't have expected to see that kind of person selling that kind of service to that level of customer, like, at this kind of show.
Right.
You know, like, this is not like a trade show.
Right.
But it was still cool to see all that tech and all that, like, all those things that guy could do. Did you see that? I was kind of like more in the front of the expo hall.
Yeah.
Okay, you saw it. Okay.
I saw that because I was a little bit confused because in the aisle prior to that was the Sciocast.
Yes.
And then I went around to the next aisle and then there was that guy. I was like, is this just like, there's like a Sciocast showdown going down right here?
Yeah. And the Sciocast thing was the same kind of weirdness. It's like, this is kind of more of a tradesperson like thing, trade show thing, but it's still cool to see the tech.
I was happy to see that the Sciocast booth was there again this year, because it was there last year, because it tells me that they got enough value of attending to want to return.
Yep.
And that means, from what my perspective would be of it not being your ideal audience of people that were there and going through the booths, there was still enough to make it valuable. And that's great. That's cool.
Awada had a huge fucking booth. Yeah. Not super big, but like way bigger than the previous shows. I thought it was like a triple long like booth with all kinds of crazy stuff in it too. I had a great chat with one of the guys there. They sent me a Takumi a long time ago, which is like one of their like super nice Micron airbrushes. And so we had a chat about that and some other things too. So that was cool to see their booth kind of expanding as well. I'm trying to think of other cool things. I don't want to just like talk about like a bazillion game demos. Yeah. But I will talk about one.
Okay.
Okay. You've heard it about it. Okay. I don't know if I had played it at that point in the Tup Live yet. So I think this is going to be still new info, but motherfucking Ghost Boat / Demon Ship. It's called Demon Ship, but Ghost Boat's a funny name.
Yeah. It's Ghost Boat.
This game is called a micro game.
Yeah.
And the game, like, you bought a terrain set that has magnets built into it that is designed for the game, because there are certain types of terrain and shapes that you use when making a layout. But Malev gave me a demo on the last day, right before the vendor hall closed on Sunday, and he was like, okay, here's how we do it. He put the little, I don't know, 8-inch by 8-inch base down. We rolled some dice. It determined the terrain. We rolled some more dice. It determined doorways and other tchotchkes you put in the area, where the monsters go, where you go. And it's just like, you know, point A to point B. You got to get from here to here. And like, these things are going to, they have AI built in. They attack you. The way that the alternating activation works is super interesting. And it was like a little solo micro game that's so easy to set up, so fast to play. And I was like, this is just like, I don't even care if other than it's just so different that I want to like support it and I want to play it. Cause like, I've never seen anything like this, like at least in my experience. So that was so cool. Check out Demon Ship from Black Sight Studios. Do a little Googling. Or we'll put it in the description below. Definitely worth at least looking at.
Yeah. Did you see the Malev showed this week on Instagram the box of the game? It looks like a retro, like old school Atari box.
We'll put it right here on the screen for the viewers in the video.
Yeah. I mean, 100% like Atari 3600 or whatever cartridge is what it looks totally modeled after, and I'm for it. Like,
dude, it's so fucking cool.
Yeah, like the whole idea of a micro game in our sphere is completely new, but if you look at it through like the video game lens,
yeah,
it totally makes sense.
Yeah,
this all-encompassing, really cool, like it's niche, but it's quick to play. It's just aesthetically so pleasing.
Yeah.
And leaning into that and all the work on the rule book, the box, the compactness and cool, tight little terrain package thing, like everything about it is so well thought out. And like going back to something that like Sean Sutter about indie games, mm-hmm. and finding what little things that people will just appreciate and treasure and play, and it doesn't need to be so, you know, attached to your core as a person, because I truly feel that a big part of what makes Warhammer successful is people associate with it as part of who they are and their personality, and it games don't need to be that to be wonderful.
You're so right, and I just thought of this analogy, like, in the past, you talk about like what kind of video gamer are you? Are you the kind of video gamer that attaches your like you play the same game for a decade, right? Mm-hmm. That's definitely what I am. Like, are you the? But there are so many people that play small games and then kind of just move on and experience all these different single player games, right? And so, like, to me, the majority of the miniature hobby at the moment is like the kind of gamer that I am, or maybe I once was more in the past. They like, when they think of a game system, they're like, I'm going to play this game for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
And like, that's not true. That's the thought going into it. You're making an investment, right? It's expensive.
Yep.
These games take a long time to play. They take a long time to paint. So it's totally reasonable assumption. But now with a micro game, it has five figs, two demons, like two melee demons, two range demons, and like a passenger that's trying to get through this fucking demon ship. And it's like, that's it. The game takes 30 minutes to play. It doesn't need to, you don't have to wrap yourself around it. It's like, it's so simple. And you can play it and you can move on. It can be like Hades, right? I played that game for 80 hours and now I'm kind of done. And now I'm looking for the next thing. You know, now I'm playing Hollow Knight.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's a great next one.
I know it is, dude. That's
a great game.
So now it's like that. Like, why can't miniature wargaming be like that? And the answer is they can. And here is maybe the maybe a very first version of what that could look like.
Yeah.
So it's so cool. It's so cool to see the innovation.
And just the nature of those kinds of games are so valuable in terms of like gateway games too.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah.
I could sit down and play Ghost Boat with my daughter, and I feel like because it's quick, because it's concise, but it's just the attention of detail can be put into every little thing because it doesn't have to be this massive cloud of a game. It can be this, you know, just one raindrop.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I feel like whenever, like, I love how you unironically say Ghost Boat, like you're just making this thing a reality. What if he makes a fantasy version called Ghost Boat and it's like a guy on a boat?
So my pitch to Malev through all of Adepticon, so I had a running joke with him, was because I thought of Ghost, because the story behind Ghost Boat is there was the first teasers to Demon Ship prior to Adepticon, and I ran into Malev on that Wednesday night, and I forgot the name of the game.
Okay.
And I was like, what is it? It's like, it's two words. It's a Ghost Boat. And he's like, Demon Ship? And I'm like, nah, I think I like Ghost Boat better. And that was it. That was it. I couldn't think of the name of the game, but I knew it was on the tip of my tongue. I said Ghost Boat. And so then throughout the rest of the convention hall, or the convention, I willed it into reality of being meme. And we're going to keep it going, because then my pitch to him was the next micro game or the expansion to Demon Ship is obviously Ghost Boat.
Yeah.
Like, if this can become a reality based off of a mistaken misunderstanding of the name of the game, I mean, if that's not indie, I don't know what is. So,
that was a great game. Another one from Blacksite that I haven't played, but I would love to look at and try out, is called Yasfiga. It's a diceless skirmish war game. I know nothing else about it other than the stylings and the print for the rule book, just like Demon Ship, were phenomenal. Like, they really thought about it. It looks beautiful. I don't know if the game is good or trash, but just the elevator pitch of a diceless miniature war game is really cool. Now, we've seen it before, so if they do the kind of the deck of card things that Malifaux does, you know, whatever. Not going to be super special IMO if they kind of just, you know, took a similar thing, but they have a different approach. Very excited for it. Haven't read the book yet, though, because I fucking lost it.
Oh, no.
I don't know where it is. I haven't lost anything else from Adepticon, apparently, other than my fucking Vector shirt.
Yeah, well, there you go.
Yeah.
Didn't know it was missing.
Yeah, but I need to find that book. Also, the source has it, so if I can't find it, I'm going to buy it.
We're just going to go over there and commandeer one.
Yeah. But yeah, it's I'm hyped for that game.
We just all aboard the Ghost Boat, head on over. I think overall, some of the things that I look back on Adepticon that were the most fun. So I have a running name for this episode that I put in our document. I don't know if it's going to be the official episode or not. Was titled, it was the best of Adepticons. It was the worst.
It's kind of
because for me personally, that is it 100% in a nutshell.
Yeah.
And when I think of the bests, it just felt that everywhere we went, there was people laughing, people having fun conversations, got to meet all sorts of new people, got to meet people that had just met other people, and then they pulled you in, and so they're not long friends, and you're not long friends with any of them, but by the end, you know, you feel like, oh man, this is just a great time and a great, like, single serving friendship, right? This one, you know, this one moment of just shared appreciation for things. And that was so, so stinking cool.
Yeah. About it being the worst of times. Like, it is totally fucking okay to, like, be upset about not placing a Golden Demon. Yeah. And I feel like a lot of people are like, you know, whatever, like, you know, they may not say it, but they might think, you know, whatever, you're being a whiner, you just wanted a place. It is so okay to feel your feels, like, do that insane amount of work, have that emotional investment, not win, and then not feel okay about it. As long as eventually, like, you move on and try new things, right? If you, like, get stuck in that rut, then it's bad. But, like, I don't think you should ever feel guilty about, like, not having not a great time.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of inherent to this kind of a system with a Golden Demon, where it's the three places system, where it's haves and have nots. You know, did you get a demon or did you not? And so it's kind of tough, and it makes that pill that much harder to swallow. But it also,
It also is why I love it. Because to me, it makes it mean that much more. And I really, really push for it. And to fail as somebody that is a competitive person in this, I mean, it's called competitive miniature painting. You are entering a competition. That competitive nature drove me, and it drives everyone that enters, whether it's their first one and they're just kind of get the feels of it, or people that have been doing it for a decade or longer. That drives you. But that feeling of just like, I did all this and it wasn't enough. If you don't feel that, you're probably not going to be the kind of person that keeps entering anyway, right? Because you need to have a certain amount of that is your fire. And, you know, and if someone just throws a bucket of water on it, it's like, well, that kind of sucks.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was really rough. Like I was probably, I would say it was not the most emotionally damaged I've been in my whole life, but it's certainly a top 10 moment of my life of feeling completely crushed. And it was really awkward afterwards because I felt so happy for my friends that won and the people that were new friends that won. And, you know, so happy for Ben Cantor for beating my ass in Diorama. I felt so happy for Andy Wardle for getting two golds, which were probably two of my favorite pieces of the entire Golden Demon. I felt so happy for Neil for winning the Slayer Sword, because over the weekend I'd never met Neil in my life, and I ended up hanging out with him four different times over 4 days, and just such a funny dude, so many laughs we had, and so I felt so happy for him.
Yeah,
and so many others. And so it's really weird, right? Because you feel like you shouldn't be able to do both, but that's how I felt, and it was really interesting.
Yeah.
And I see, Vince had a really kind of breakthrough moment in his painting career via Golden Demon this year, and he has decided to take action and focus on what gives him the most joy and what makes him most excited to paint, and that isn't Golden Demon for him.
Yeah.
And I 100% support him. And I also, just like he said many times in his video about it, I also don't think people should follow him just because he's doing it. He doesn't want that either. It's about what works for him, what makes him happy.
Yeah. He went through this process, experienced these things, and made choices based on those experiences. Like, you should do the same thing, right? Mm-hmm. You might discover that you have a different opinion about the stuff, right? So it's important to not base your opinions on other people's opinions, to go through that process to figure out what's right for you.
Yeah. Yep. And this year, I can't remember if we talked about this at Tup Live or not, but this year, you and I probably spent in all of our Adepticons together, the least amount of time together.
Yes.
And because you were doing a lot more gamey games.
Yes.
And I ended up spending like a lot of time with Vince. So, because Vince didn't have Tom this year. And so Vince and I would go, and we would go through the Age of Sigmar tournament hall. And, you know, he'd talk to all these people, all his Age of Sigmar cronies.
Dude, I bet when fucking Vince walks through the AOS like gaming area, everyone's like, yo, Vince, like, what up? Like, he's like a rock star, dude.
It's like this weird ethereal spotlight follows him all around the hall whatever. And got to chat with a whole bunch of people, got to meet people. It was great, too, that people that aren't like big painters, real gamers or whatever, and you know, we're like, who's this weird guy following you, Vince, and everything? And I was like, I just love that. And seeing their passion, asking about lists, dude. Like being like, oh, who's top table? What's he running? Is he running this? And like Vince like freaking knew all this shit and wasn't even paying attention to it, but he knew it. And it was so cool. And seeing the display boards and us talking, you know, it's firsthand with Vince over the course of the whole weekend, like his starting millings of, as he was getting data points on how his pieces were doing a Golden Demon, and did they get a finalist pin or did they get commended or whatever. And it was like, it was such an interesting trip. And I was glad that I experienced that with him, mm-hmm. as much as there was some tough moments for Vince in that. So
yeah, for sure. That was one thing that I didn't really do, and I kind of regret. I did it like very briefly on Sunday to get some footage of stuff. But Joe Cryer was like, swing by my game and check me out. I was like, all right, sure. And I just never had a time, an opportunity to do that. Can't be, Need that Hermione Granger clock.
Yeah, dude.
Wind back time. Go somewhere else. Do something else.
Yeah, that's a good. That'd be a great one to get in terms of like little artifacts.
Yeah,
that's a pretty good little artifact to have.
Yeah, yeah. I had some meetings too. It's like I did the interviews as well. I did 3 interviews, and then I had meetings with people who I had sponsorships for. They wanted to bring me models at the show instead of mailing them, and they want to talk about the sponsorship and stuff like that. But I don't know how it happened, but I lined myself up for 3 sponsored display model paint jobs. And I do like that kind of video. I'll do like 1 or 2 of those a year. But I got Nico Galaxy that I'm doing right now. And I love all these models and companies. I got Mindwork Game, the Pizza Boy, coming in the second half of April.
Oh, the Pizza Boy, man.
Exactly. And then I got fucking Chimera with their new vampire-esque model from their new Tenebra Kickstarter, not called Fate of Hysteria, a different one now. But I got 3 in a row. I think by the end I'm gonna be done with display models for like 6 months.
Yep.
That's a lot of fucking big models to paint. Yeah.
Big models take a little bit more from you.
Oh god, they do, yeah.
Yeah. And I also think because you and I paint them at a less frequent amount.
Yeah.
Like as you get to like get yourself more in their mindset and overthink more.
Yeah, it's definitely, I mean, yeah, it's a new thing, so that new things always take more energy and more thought, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're not as good at it.
All right, I want to share a little story before we get into what we bought.
Okay.
So this is a multi-part story, but I'll only be hitting the high points. And the story begins on Thursday night of Adepticon after the recording of Tup Live. Somehow, I found myself, my good buddy Sam Lenz, we were both feeling zero pain. We made our way over to the Golden Demon cases. And as per usual, I had to go find the security guard.
Oh my God, yeah, this story.
So, some like the crowd ended up, there was nobody there. It's probably like 1 a.m. or something. There was nobody there. And, you know, within an hour, like there was people. There's, you know, there's these group of guys that came over with a case of beer and ended up hanging out with them and hanging out with them other nights. Random comers and goers. Vince was there and you stopped and went. A long, long conversation with the security guard. Big, scary dude. But super, super nice. And the interesting thing about this, well, my whole point of this in my mental state was to pass enough charisma checks to let me hold the sword. I eventually did pass those charisma checks, and he was going to let me do it. But I decided somehow, and I think probably other people told me this was probably not a smart idea, I decided not to do it for 2 reasons. The first and most important one was that this guy, who was an amazing guy, he could get in trouble or potentially lose his job, right? Because there's no way I'm taking a picture of me hoisting the sword and not putting it all over social media.
Right.
So it's going to come back to who allowed that, and he's going to get in trouble. So I was not going to do that. And number 2, this was still Thursday night. If this gets posted anywhere, they're probably going to disqualify me from the Golden Demon.
Yeah, both good reasons.
So somehow in my state where John gives zero fucks about everything, a good decision was made.
Maybe by other people.
Probably by other people. Usually other people need to be involved in this decision-making process in this wee hours of the morning. But he didn't know anything about miniature painting. So over the course of the next 3 nights, I went there every night because he was there working every night and talked to him about it and about like the stories about how you paint that or why do you spend so many hours and what's it all about. And by middle of the night on Friday, he said to me, he's like, you know what? Like, this is art. It was never, I never pushed on him anything other than the connection to enjoying the world, enjoying the lore, enjoying the models, enjoying the creating cool things. And he came to that assumption on his own.
Mm.
And he was like, this is art. This is amazing. And thinking about all the work and thinking about all the decisions and thinking about why you posed him like this there and what that means, whatever. And that night, Friday night, this random old dude with the cane was walking in and was not there for the convention. I don't know what he was doing in Chicago, but he comes in and the security guard goes over to him and he kind of helped him a little bit because he had a little bit of trouble walking and then starts to explain to this guy what he's looking at.
Okay.
Explains to him what Warhammer is, explains to this what this competition is, explains all of this to him. And then later that night, he helps that guy leave. On Saturday night, so the night before the end, he's there. And at this point, we are fast friends and you know, and he's so excited. And what he tells me is he's like, you know what? I think I'm going to start painting these. He's like, I think I want to enter this.
Okay.
It was like,
that's so cool.
This amazing three-night trilogy of a guy that it does like not at all associated with his background, what his interests are, what he finds fascinating. And to come to not only appreciate it over the course of three nights, but really get excited about it and want to do it himself.
And call it art.
What a novel thought, right?
Like,
right?
No one, that's not a normal thing to think. I don't think. And you didn't push that on. You didn't call it art. So that's super cool.
So, because like last year, the guy that was the security guard sat at that front check-in desks all night, every night on his phone. This guy, this year, I never saw him have a phone out. He never was sitting down. He was either talking to people as they were looking at the cases late at night, or he was just doing it on his own with nobody around and looking. You could tell that like there was something in there that really resonated with him. And I was like, you know, this is really interesting. And what my plan was at the end, because after the second night, I'm like, this guy is so, he was so interesting. He was such a character. And my plan was to bring my camera Saturday night and to do an interview with him.
Mm.
And that was, when I look back at my biggest regret of Adepticon was not having that interview with him. I also regret not painting my model good enough to get a Golden Demon. But
maybe this is the second thing I regret the most. But
that was a story that I hadn't really, you know, you and I had discussed it a little bit, but I hadn't really told people the whole story.
That's a cool story.
Goody peepees. So, yeah, so I really hope he's there back next year, but, you know, it's through contracted security or whatever, who knows, but, or maybe he's, dude, how fucking wild would it be if we see him there in just, like, street clothes and he points out which model is his in the case, dude?
Yeah.
Dude.
And then he fucking wins.
Dude, he fucking beats me. Ah! All right, to wrap up this main topic, we're going to talk about the things that we bought at Adepticon that we're kind of most pumped for.
Mm. I'm most excited for Demon Ship. We already went over that, though.
Did you pre-order it?
I did, yes.
Oh, I need to pre-order it.
Yes, I pre-ordered it at the show, the terrain set. It doesn't come with rules or figures. That wasn't a thing at the show. That was even in the twinkle of Malev's eyes. But now he's working on fucking figs for the game.
Oh.
And that second box is now a box of tokens, models, and the rules if you want it. But they are freely available online, I think. I could be wrong about that. But yeah, Demon Ship, that one I'm excited for. And the other one that I'm excited for was this pewter figure from a Warcaster called the Ice Witch. It was the perfect blend of modern crispy casting results and a vintage look on a model that for some reason I'm into right now. I don't know why, but I am. I'm fucking rolling with it. So it was just a cool little find for $15 in this booth that I only got to find because I was like I was going through most booths, really searching the racks, looking for shit, and I found that one, and it was really fucking cool. And so I'm really looking forward to painting that up for maybe a necromancer female in my army.
Ooh.
She's like floating on her cape, and she looks kind of menacing. So yeah, I'm really hyped for that that model.
Okay, I spent a lot of money at the Relic Blade booth. Hung out with my buddy Sean Sutter, and one thing that I've learned over the years is
Sean is such a fun guy that I can't go to his booth and hang out with him for a while and not end up just like walking away and my arms are filled with Relic Blade stuff.
This is not the first time you bought Relic Blade stuff.
Yeah. I also have recently, his last Kickstarter backed it fucking full what ball the sack. Fuck?
John, have you played this game a single time?
Yes, I've played the demo. Yes, but Sexy T Joshy and I are going to play.
Okay.
We're going to get Ginger Jesus Drew to play with us too. So we got it. We got a squad, dude. We're going to play. Right. So I bought more Relic Blade stuff. I bought some like cool, unique hero single figs. I bought a couple of factions. I bought the Undead faction and I bought the War Pigs faction because those are like kind of good general bad guy ones. Also, the War Pigs have sweet like charge mechanics.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
Yeah. I fucking smashed your people when. Other than your stupid gnome sniper that picked off my entire fucking team one by one.
Dad told me he bought that model, and I was like, you made a great choice.
Yeah, so I bought like Lady Aurelia, who is a relic knight and just an amazing alternate model of a female knight, the cool pose.
Nice.
And I'm really excited. I'm going to be doing a video on Relic Blade here soon.
Oh, cool.
The models, because there's, again, when you're talking about this unique aesthetic combined with really understanding what makes a figure fun to paint.
Yes.
And those models do it for me. And I think there's a lot of kind of intangibles that they accomplish that are really, really fun.
You should do it in April.
I know. I got two more to do in April, so I'm going to fit it. I want to fit it in.
Oh, okay, cool.
I want to fit it in. Otherwise, I can be like, didn't get it in April, May. Just a reminder, the month just left.
Yeah,
but yes, but that was my one of my plans. But I'm gonna have a chat, maybe do a little fun little interview and something with Sean, which is my interviews are mostly just making funny jokes, and then seeing how he responds awkwardly. So I did that, and I also bought three large scale figures, and
three,
and awkwardly enough, watching Sam Lenz's stream on Twitch, like a couple days after we got back from Adepticon. Hearing him talking about, he bought three as well from the same three booths as me for the same reasons that I did, but we never had this conversation at Adepticon.
Same figs?
Not the same figs.
Okay.
We bought one from Mindwork Games.
Okay.
Bought one from Nico Galaxy, and we bought one from Big Child Creatives. Each of us. Those three.
Did you guys buy the Echoes of Camelot model that you're going to paint?
I think all of us are going to paint that, but no, that's not what we bought.
No, okay.
We hadn't made a final decision on that. We need to get the four horsemen together to all make right. that final call.
I'm game for that, by the way.
So we're going to do at a future VinciCon, all hang out, all paint the same Echoes of Camelot model.
Yeah.
And then we just see and learn from what the decisions each other made and how we approach things or whatever. Because I think there's a ton of learning opportunities from that.
Yeah.
Right?
Definitely.
So, and those models are badass. And that's probably like the only way I would end up painting one, not because they're not awesome. They are. But I bought the one where it's the female knight. I can't remember what the name of the model is, but she is a fantasy knight and she's holding her helmet and she's kind of looking down at downward with kind of a downtrodden look and she's got a blood splatter on her face. I had it picked as our favorite model probably like 4 or 5 months ago.
Okay.
But that one,
she mounted?
No, it's a bust.
Oh, okay. I can't remember which one that is, but I'll look at it later.
So I got that one. I got the creepy one from Mindwork where it's almost like lich looking dude with the weird headdress on. He's holding the head of a decapitated elk. Is that's 100% me right there.
Yeah.
And then the Nico Galaxy one, I actually think it's an Inu. Because they have like two different lines.
Inu Kingdoms. Yeah.
It was the elf chick with a scepter.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I wanted one of those fantasy ones. But the problem was is that they had the ones all painted there that were like the box arts. And most of them were painted by fucking Dave Colwell. So it's just like, oh, the best version that will ever exist of this model. Here it is.
I actually talked to Mateo. I think I already mentioned this to you, but it's interesting for the goody peepees to hear. Mateo is the owner of Mindwork, and he had no painted models at his booth. And he commented on that because of a longer conversation we were having. And he was like, are you? not what happened. I was just drinking his bang, and he coughed into it and got it all over his glasses.
I got arterial spray all over my face.
Oh, no.
It was like one of those coughs that like catches up on you out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Mid-drink.
Yeah. It's like, hello! And it's like... Anyways, Mateo said that when he brings painted figures to a show, he sells less. And I'm just like, I'm so flabbergasted by this fact.
He's fucking smart. That's what I think too, baby.
So yeah, like, you know, something to consider.
But I was happy I got to actually hold and look in person of a Dave Coldwell piece.
Yeah. No, and that was so fucking cool.
It was like even more mind-boggling how good they are.
Yeah, getting to, I spent a solid amount of time being a fucking awkward dude, just standing at that booth and looking at those models and not conversing with the people there. Because I think all of them speak only Polish other than the main guy, mm-hmm. Peter. I'm not sure. I didn't really chat much with the other people there, so I don't know. But I was just being awkward and silent, just like looking at models very intently for like at least 15 minutes.
Yes.
One last thing I bought. I bought a Carnival Warband or Skirmish Force, whatever they're fucking called, again. Not the vampire one, but the one with a bunch of awesome Templars and Knights and shit like that. They were so fucking cool. I really want to play that game. I didn't demo it, sadly. They didn't have demos at their booth. And it was hard to find where they were going on. But they were a really cool like little faction that I'm way more excited about aesthetically than actually the vampire one. I don't like the vampire sculpts a ton. But those ones are awesome.
Yeah, I was impressed when I got to see yours and Sexy Teeth Joshy's Carnival models.
Yeah.
It was impressive.
It was good. All right, out of the news.
We got some newsy news.
Out of the news!
First and foremost, we wanna put a shout out to our girl Louise, who has left her job at Games Workshop and has started her own YouTube channel called Rogue Hobbies. So check that out.
Got that first video out, slamming. It's got somewhere in the mid 40,000 views.
Yeah, and like
first fucking video, dude.
Yeah, I mean, if you ever were wondering if the runway off of your success of being a known person at Games Workshop would convert to being popular and valuable in the YouTube sphere, the answer is yes.
Just so you know, we're just kind of floating that knowledge out into the ether for no particular reason.
Yeah, and I'm sure there's no correlation to all of their public figures having left Games Workshop to the fact that now you don't get to see who those people are on the Games Workshop.
Or hear those people, right? Yeah. They don't speak, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, but they probably speak. But.
Yeah, but it is, you can't really identify with just a generic voice. Yeah, it is only hands, I think, is the term that's going around, which is beautiful. Whoever came up with that term, I appreciate that so much. So, I mean, the alternative, what they could do, they could actually compensate the people that do those jobs and do them well and bring more eyes and more passion and commitment to the hobbying of Games Workshop games. You could fucking pay them well so they don't want to leave.
You can make a content creator for your fucking brand.
Yes. And that person will be happy and they don't have all the other stress that us YouTubers have.
Yeah.
I mean, that is one way a business can succeed in that regard, but that's not what they're doing. So,
but yeah, check out Luis's new video on her Rainbow Marines. We'll have a link down below. Give her some support for the future so she can keep doing this. We're in April right now. This is other games April at the moment. A lot of content creators are making games about smaller indie games, just smaller games in general. Don't need to be indie or whatever that term means. I know that... Jay is doing something, or he already has done stuff. I met Jay from Eon's Battle Adepticon a couple times, and he already has all his videos finished for April at the show. And I'm just like, come on, man. You're making us all look bad here. So he's got his videos rocking. Zumi Kido made a video for OGA. A couple of smaller creators as well are doing it. So if you guys are into a couple of small games and small creators, not just games, it's also the models and the painting of small models. Just physically small models. No, smaller brands. That is also coming in April as well from myself.
There's a lot of creators on Twitch that are doing it.
Nice.
Yeah, it's spreading like wildfire.
I love that shit. Okay. idea people were going to give two shits about this. I thought that it was going to be just kind of like a thing that Scott's doing, or like a thing that whatever four people are doing, and then it goes away. But I love to see that it's spreading. That makes me so fucking happy.
Yeah.
All right, next thing. Neil Hollis takes Slayer Sword at Adepticon. Kind of went over that already. Him and his lovely Lazarus piece got the Slayer Sword at this year's GD. And then you have this one that you discovered about a different kind of way to make paint.
Yeah, my buddy Michael, who runs AustinCon in Austin, Minnesota, miniatures wargaming and board gaming little convention that I love to attend every year. He sent me this, an article that we'll put a link down below so you can check this out. But scientists have created a new way to make paint that doesn't use pigments. And there's all these sciencey things involved in it. But they say that this paint is then the lightest paint in the world. And it took me a while to try to wrap my brain around what do they mean by the lightest paint in the world. They don't mean like it's the most translucent. They mean that the amount of coverage that you need in order to give that thing that changed that color, the weight of the layers of paint is the lightest because it uses the least amount of paint to create that color.
They said the layer was 150 nanometers. That is microscopically thin. That's like so much thinner than any kind of paintbrush application we could ever even like hope to get in the next 1,000 years.
Right.
But yeah, it's two layers of paint that make no color. And then when you geometrically shift them, then the color changes.
Yeah.
So there's no pigment. It's just about the orientation of the layers changing the colors.
Wild.
Fucking crazy. It has a lot of implications for like the air conditioning, sector, because it's going to allow them to run way more efficiently, because the thing the actual unit is painted with is going to help keep heat off of it. So that's interesting. I wonder if we're going to see things in our sector, you know, several years down the future.
Right. So once this technology becomes more implemented.
Yeah.
It sounded like stuff for like the houses too, like using it for like house paint, external house paint.
Definitely.
For like temperature control and that kind of thing.
Definitely. But
once it becomes implemented, how long before a mini paint company can kind of figure out its uses for us?
That's cool. I mean, that's a super cool thing that you found. Love to hear about that stuff. Goonhammer announces the Unified Tournament Circuit, the UTC. It is not a competitor with ITC. They will still track stats for that circuit as well. But it's largely 40K and AOS, but it stands for Universal. So they're combining together many other tournaments to make one bigger one. More stats means more accurate looks at what the game is operating like, which means hopefully better changes to it and hopefully a better game. Hopefully that works out. And I hope that this organization is a good thing for everyone involved.
Excelente. One thing here that I wanted to bring up is that currently the Redgrass Games R9 desk lamp for creative people, that Kickstarter is now live. And our good buddy over 52 Miniatures recently released a video on lighting.
Yeah.
And he called the video it's the sequel to my lighting video.
Okay.
And he's like, I didn't ask John, and John doesn't know, but this is the sequel. And what he meant by that, which was actually quite endearing, was that he appreciated and thought a lot of the stuff that I said he agreed with, and it was like his take from his years of professional experience in using lighting for his day job.
Yeah, as a cinematographer.
So it's like $220, this light, and I'm not saying buy it, and I'm not saying don't buy it. I'm just saying it's a badass light, but there are a lot of badass things in this world that doesn't mean that we need to buy them all just because they're the most badass thing. You know, you can spend $300,000 on a new car, but that doesn't mean you probably should.
Yeah.
But also it's fucking amazing. It's the best light I've ever used.
Yeah.
I don't think we can ignore Battletech, John.
No. Battletech is unstoppable. Battletech Mercenaries Kickstarter hit $3.6 million in one fucking day.
What?
And still has 3 days to go as of the release.
Are you kidding me?
Wait, yeah.
Did they get a zero wrong? a couple of decimal points off.
3.6 milli in a day. So this game is big, and people like it, and maybe we should play it. Well, okay, I don't know what Mercenaries is. It sounds like a different version of the game. I know that they had Alpha Strike as well, which was a simpler version of the rule set. I know Baltic tends to be a little crunchy. But I want to try it out at some point. I have wanted to try it out. And we got to take a look at it because this game's got a lot of following.
Oh, okay. 10 days left to go. $5.3 million currently.
God damn!
Yeah, bud. Okay. It comes down to me. The thing that it has always bothered me about Battletech is the robots look dumb. I'm just looking through this Kickstarter right now to see if they still look dumb. Okay, these look better.
Okay.
These look better.
I'm gonna look at the starter set here. Oh, wait, that gets me to the Kickstarter. Okay, okay. I've never been a fan of mechs in general.
Yeah, it's not been my thing. You know, and that's part of it, but...
Yeah. So we're seeing some STLs here. Don't really know what STLs are gonna look like once the casting is done, but there is definitely some more dynamic poses... Definitely some, like, they look a little bit different. Yeah, this is, if the STLs are what the models are going to look like, these look really nice.
Yeah.
This is definitely an improvement.
I mean, that's just never been my genre of a thing.
Yeah, I'm in the same place as you.
Right. But, like, if they looked a little bit more like Gundams, because, like, Gundams are a lot of, like, badassness to them, I would probably, you know, be for it. And it looks like from this Kickstarter they are starting to kind of go that way. But
yeah. John, there's another version of Zombicide out called White Death, and it is a Eastern Asian influenced one. So you get get zombies that are samurais and they're archers and they're like ninjas.
Oh my god!
I don't know if you like that kind of thing, but yeah, it's out.
I do, and then I'd back it and I'd get the 600 models, and I would be like, I don't actually want to paint any of these because they're derpy plastic.
Anyways. That's awesome for Battletech. Happy for them. If you are a fan of War Machine, version 4 is finally out and available for free. And you can check it out, I believe, on their app. Yes, their app. So that's finally out. Check it out if you are a War Machine fan.
We got a little drama in the world right now. And this is by a reputable source known as Spiky Bits. it says, GW has killed off Primaris. In the article, it points out that in all the literature so far around 10th edition, which I'm sure is vast, Games Workshop is yet to use the term Primaris. And the smoking gun on this news is that they have the Intercessor Squad data sheet has been either spoiled or revealed by Games Workshop. In the term Primaris, in like keywords and all that kind of shit, fails to exist. What do you got to think about this, Scott? What's your hot take?
Man, I don't give a fuck.
That is the correct answer. Yes.
Yeah. Whatever. I mean, like, I don't know if the info out there is vast enough to make that kind of conclusion. Like, they have a story. They have a story like backing up why the Marines got bigger. They crossed the Rubicon, which I think is some river of some kind. I have no fucking clue.
Yeah, it's in Egypt.
Okay, yeah, for fucking sure. They cross the Rubicon, they pray to fucking Ra, the sun god, and then they got big. Dude,
that actual version of the lore is probably way more believable than the actual GW lore.
Having read the AOS lore, I agree.
Yeah.
To me, it's baked into the story, so I don't know why they would decide to not continue it, but who knows, and fucking who cares.
Right, yeah. I kind of hope that it's true. And that they just are phasing it out, and they're just kind of like going to retroactively say, these are just Space Marines now.
That'd be kind of crazy.
Right? Like, nothing's changed. You know, you're kind of like whitewashing history. None of it is actually real. This is just what they always look like. These are just cooler looking versions, and just believe us. Go forth.
All right, we got to do our one last segment here. Unless you have another one you want to talk about. The Kickstarter Corner. So James loves doing these things. The campaign he likes called the Paint Pal Studio, a 3D printable hobby system. It's a printable, it's STLs for a printable paint organization system. And he says, maybe it's just because I've never considered 3D printing as an option for this, but I think this is a super neat and could be very useful to a lot of people out there. It's cool. Yeah, we think about models a lot when it comes to 3D printing and not so much about tools, yeah. But totally a viable option for printers.
Yeah, which is, this kind of leads me into, like, recently a buddy, I had too many 3D printers, and he's helped me. He set up all my my network and my server and stuff for my YouTube videos, and so he's adamantly said that he doesn't want me to ever pay him a cent. So I like give him fun things. So I gave him a 3D printer, and one of the things he's very analytical, very like engineer driven mindset, and he was printing off these really cool deck boxes for Magic.
Yeah.
And I was like, I've never thought of anything like that. And it's the same kind of printer and same kind of resin. And so he's like kind of looking at other resin alternatives that are not as much detail focused, more about sturdiness focused.
Yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I was just like, that makes me think of that. And especially, especially as like your painting area changes over time, especially as you evolve of what you decided you want or don't want, you can then just print the new thing, and it kind of can evolve with you and with your painting. I think that's a pretty sweet idea.
Yeah, there's nothing more satisfying than a YouTube video of someone organizing one of their drawers with 100% perfectly fitting 3D fit like little bins for all the fucking tools they need. It is hot.
Yes.
Welcome to the end of the podcast. Thank you so long for hanging out all the way to the end. Listen to us ramble on about Adepticon for a third time in a row. We're sorry.
This is the last time we will talk about it ever.
And then we'll move on to greener pastures.
Yeah, we got a fun topic for next episode that Scotty brought up.
We do, yeah. And I don't think we need to shill again. We kind of did that in the middle, right?
Yeah, we don't need to shill. But, you know, you think about in your head what our shilling would sound like right now. Yeah. And then take the appropriate action based on that.
Yes.
So, yeah, next episode, y'all wanted some conflict. We're coming in with a capital con.
Yes.
But not about a convention.
No.
It's about conflict.
Oh, I see how you did there. Very nice.
Awkward pause.
Just waiting for you, buddy.
I know. I was going to say something, and I forgot how the line goes, because I fucked it up on last episode, too.
Yeah, you fucking did.
While I was standing in the middle of the aisle. Okay.
you fucking wandered, and you're just like... Lord knows what.
Dude, I was river dancing. There's very little times in your life where you're at, like, you're in the middle of a live recording of something that people think you're a professional, and you're just river dancing in the middle of the aisles.
Yeah,
dude.
You know, you got to take those opportunities when they arise.
You check that off the box, off the bucket list. All right, we're going to see you back in a fortnight, but until then, we catch you on the flippity flop.